time. Yeah, they roll around and drink Carolina shine. I've seen the devil in a dark, cold mine. I've been higher than a Georgia pine.
Good morning. Good morning and welcome to Road Warrior Radio. You're tuned in live this Tuesday, July 10th, 2018 on the one and only Republic Broadcasting Network. And as always, thanks for coming along for the ride. And a wild ride it is. Definitely gets stranger all the time. I am your host, Chris Hinckley. We are all Road Warriors, those who esteem ourselves to be. And as always, feel free to dive into the chat area at roadwarriorradio.chattango.com. For interesting and lively discussion. Things are very interesting. An email from Bill Johnson yesterday, I think, really kind of describes the problem aptly. So Bill writes, the article below is for my forward-thinking friends. You don't have to read it word for word. Simple skimming will ring like a loud clangor. And if you read and ponder, you will think, oh, you know what? The highlighting is mine, of course. Rock on, my friends. Bill Johnson. But, you know, it's it definitely does ring true. It reminds me of John Adams' words. All the perplexities, confusions, and distresses in America arise not from want of honor, not from defects in their constitution or confederation, nor from want of honor or virtue, so much as the downright ignorance of the nature of coin, credit, and circulation. So I'm going to read the article in its entirety. It's not long. From July 9, yesterday, Sovereign Valley Farm, Chile. From Simon Black, founder of SovereignMan.com, he writes, exactly 10 years ago, in the middle of the summer of 2008, the world was only 2 months away from the most severe financial crisis since the Great Depression. A lot of people heard the giant sucking sound. It was pretty obvious. If you were in the mortgage industry like I was at the time, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to see that if you take families and put them in a situation where they're at a debt-to-income ratio that is so high that they're bound to fail, it's just low enough to maintain some level of plausible deniability, but not really. How could we have known? And you put them in a home, the largest purchase that most people will ever make in their lives, financed to 80, 90, 100%. 80, 90, 100% LTV and a 40, 45, even 50% debt to income ratio is a recipe for disaster. If there's a hiccup, even if someone's changing jobs for a month, for example, their cash flow doesn't allow them they don't have any discretionary income. There's no what is referred to as disposable income. So that was what was happening. And I think it was Washington Mutual that got in trouble, as I recall. I think it was Washington Mutual that got in trouble for a proprietary loan origination software platform that was miscalculating DTIs, debt to income ratios. And it was, fairly nominal. It was basically the proprietary loan origination software was approving loans 1%, 2%, 3%. The debt to income ratios, it was approving loans on DTIs that were 1%, 2%, or 3% higher than what was authorized by the program, which doesn't seem like a whole lot, but in the actuarial tables, basically those numbers were where you hit red line, if that makes sense. So, how do you describe that? It would be like, saying this much, your daily sodium intake, this much is healthy. If you go just a fraction over that, you might have a heart attack. And if you go two or three fractions over that, probably, at risk of a heart attack. But as you look, depending on how you look at the numbers, it doesn't look like that much, which kind of reminds me how everything is being fudged these days. The numbers on autism, for example. Oh, we never used to keep track of these numbers. Yeah, well, we never had to, if you know what I mean. And if you look at the long tail data, so to speak, instead of just a little cutout slice of the last 10 minutes, then it's a shocking, tale, I suppose, pun intended, that data tells. Anyway, reminds me of that. Anyway, back to the article. Exactly 10 years ago, in the middle of the summer of 2008, the world was only 2 months away from the most severe financial crisis since the Great Depression. I think it's interesting. No one mentions the mark-to-market accounting change. Bruce Wiseman, in his series of articles over at Canada Free Press, were in my opinion, probably the best series of articles to summarize the problem. And there are very specific and intentional series of events that were put in motion over a period of many years to bring about this result. And the end result, if you understand what happened, reading Bruce Wiseman's articles, I think, is fantastic on what happened. If you didn't know before, you come away with a clear understanding that, as I always say, it's like baking an apple pie. You don't accidentally bake an apple pie. The mark-to-market accounting change, I think, was arguably one of the, if not the greatest, smoking gun. Because it never happened before, never happened again. It lasted only a moment. The moment was just long enough to crash the world's economy. And why do that? You know, a third grader could tell you that what goes up must come down. And so if you're going to shift from GAAP, generally accepted accounting principles, to mark to market, in other words, whatever the market is doing, that's where you mark your asset class. In simple terms, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to see that if, you know, you might be adversely impacted by the market. And that's precisely what happened when that change was made. The market's going up. It's great. And mad money, you know, Cramer saying, get out of bear. What are you, crazy? You must be out of your mind, little old lady. Little did America know, the little old lady's pretty smart. Cramer is mad. But the mark-to-market accounting change, you know, when Lehman collapsed and was selling MBS, mortgage-backed securities, at pennies on the dollar, guess what? The market collapsed, and everyone with those assets, which is everyone everywhere, mortgage-backed securities and everything, because, you know, Glass-Steagall had been repealed. And so these toxic investments had polluted savings accounts and retirement accounts and everything. Suddenly, all of those accounts have to mark down to about 6 cents on the dollar. And what happened? According to the SEC, $25 trillion in liquidity evaporated almost overnight, $10 trillion in the U.S. alone. And so you take that and you add that onto you know, this article and articles like it, this one by Simon Black, and you start to understand it's very difficult to argue that this was all by some kind of accident or happenstance, because it's a series of bad decisions, one after another, and very, very timely and fortuitous or unfortuitous. And, you know, how long can you continue to make that argument? Well, it was just an accident. So, Simon writes, at that time, 10 years ago, the size of the U.S. economy as measured by gross domestic product was around $14.8 trillion, by far the largest in the world. And the U.S. national debt back then was about 64% of GDP. And see, I've mentioned this stuff recently. Remember when I talked about this just a few months ago, how what happens when your debt exceeds your GDP? But I digress. Continuing, and the U.S. national debt back then was about 64% of GDP, roughly $9.5 trillion. Fast forward a decade and take a snapshot of the same numbers. U.S. GDP has grown nearly 35% to $19.9 trillion. But the national debt has soared 122% to over $21 trillion. See how they got flipped? The debt to GDP ratio in the United States is now 106%, meaning that the national debt is larger than the size of the entire U.S. economy. And remember, I talked about this. How can that? It's untenable. Yeah, the debt keeps growing rapidly. And this doesn't even take into account, by the way, that every Federal Reserve note printed has debt associated with it. Monopoly money is literally worth more because the paper it's printed on does not have debt associated with it, if that makes sense. Which is why the Federal Reserve says that the Federal Reserve note has no value. It doesn't. It has purchasing power. But for how long? Who knows? Enter the Triffin dilemma. But again, I digress. Now, debt isn't really the problem here. The problem is the way that it's been used. And that is a valid point. As Simon Black explains, debt, affectionately referred to as other people's money, opium, can actually be a great way to enhance investment returns when used wisely and judiciously. Private equity fund managers use debt to acquire businesses through what's known as a leveraged buyout, where they'll put up a portion of the cash they need and borrow the rest. I did this a couple of years ago, for example, when I purchased an Australian-based business for $6 million. A local bank offered to finance most of the acquisition with a $4.5 million loan at around 5.75% interest. That meant I only needed to write a $1.5 million check for a business that was earning nearly $2 million annually. It was a no-brainer because I knew there would be more than enough money to make the loan payment, less than $500,000 annually, and still generate a substantial return on investment. Real estate investors do the same thing when they purchase property. If you have, say, $1 million, you could pay cash for a single property that costs $1 million, or you could use that money as a down payment and buy a $5 or $10 million property, or several, obviously. If the investment is a good one, the cash flow will more than cover the loan payments, and you'll end up making a lot more money. Intelligent governments, hopefully not an oxymoron, he adds parenthetically, will do the same thing, borrowing money to finance infrastructure projects that generate more growth and tax revenue. Several years ago in Panama, for example, the government borrowed billions of dollars to finance the expansion of the Panama Canal. That's a lot of debt to take on for such a small country, but they knew that expanding the canal would dramatically increase the revenue that it generates. The canal was originally opened in 1914, back when cargo ships were much, much smaller. But by the early 21st century, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, which built the Panama Canal in the early 1900s, estimated that the number of cargo ships which could not fit in the canal's locks accounted for 45% of global trade and shipments. So increasing the size of the canal to accommodate those larger ships and hence generate more revenue from the increased tolls was a great investment and one where debt made a lot of sense. A decade later, the canal expansion is complete and Panama's economy has nearly tripled to $62 billion.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2, keep it today.
Reluctantly crouched at the starting line, engines pumping and thumping in time. The green light flashes, the flags go up, churning and burning, they yearn for the cup. They deftly maneuver and muscle for rank, fuel burning fast on an empty tank. Reckless and wild, they pour through the turns. Their prowess is potent and secretly stern. As they speed through the finish, the flags go down. The fans get up and they get out of town. The arena is empty except for one man, still driving and striving as fast as he can. The sun has gone down and the moon has come up, and long ago somebody left with the cup. But he's driving and striving and hugging the turns and thinking of someone for whom he still burns. He's going for speed. She's all alone, all alone in a time of need. Because he's racing and pacing and plotting the course. He's fighting and fighting and riding on his horse. He's going the distance.
Welcome back. Whatever happened to the concept, several concepts, whatever happened to the concept of usury and understanding what it is? Whatever happened to, Exodus 22:25, if thou lend money to any of my people that is poor by thee, thou shalt not be to him as an usurer, neither shalt thou lay upon him usury. Whatever happened to that? Which is a sentiment that is not just reserved to your people. Deuteronomy 23:20, unto a stranger thou mayest lend upon usury, but unto thy brother thou shalt not lend upon usury. And but then there is a different I forget exactly where. Same sentiment, though, toward the stranger. I think it's also Deuteronomy 23. Anyway, but this idea of not gouging people and taking advantage of people, whatever happened to the year of Jubilee, which sort of echoes Jefferson's sentiments about the earth belonging in usufruct to the living? And so when you start thinking about it, sure, traditions and things are good, but shouldn't we all be thoughtful and introspective and sober-minded about the pledges and the agreements and so forth that we bind ourselves by? But again, perhaps I digress. So, from Simon Black's letter, the canal, the Panama Canal expansion, and the Panama government borrowing, taking on considerable debt, particularly in proportion to its economy, to expand the canal. What happened? A decade later, the canal expansion is complete, and Panama's economy has nearly tripled to $62 billion. It was clearly a good investment. They borrowed $3 billion in debt and got way more than $3 billion in additional economic output. Now let's go back to the U.S. In the same period, from 2008 through 2018, the U.S. government borrowed an additional $11.6 trillion on top of the existing debt they had already borrowed. And of course, you and I know that, you know, not to grossly oversimplify, but most of that was siphoned off by intrigue and fraud through various schemes, laundering schemes, basically, to the, you know, the too big to fail nonsense institutions that shouldn't exist in the first place anyway. And what's going on overseas, you know, defense spending, so-called, which is not defense spending at all, has nothing to do with defense. It's enriching a few sleazy defense contractors and the ne'er-do-wells that help grease the wheels of those deals. And that's about it. But again, not to grossly oversimplify. Continuing, so you'd think that, okay, so in the same period, 2008 to 2018, the U.S. government borrowed an additional $11.6 trillion on top of the existing debt they had already borrowed. So you'd think that there would have been at least $11.6 trillion in additional economic output. That stands to reason, doesn't it, dollar for dollar? But that's not what happened in the land of the free. Uncle Sam borrowed $11.6 trillion between 2018 and 2008 and 2018, but the U.S. economy only grew by $5.1 trillion, so less than half. So every dollar the government borrowed resulted in just 44 cents of economic output. How long can that last? Again, you'd think that every dollar borrowed would have generated at least $1 in economic output. After all, if you borrow $10 million to acquire real estate, you'd think at least you have an asset worth $10 million, right? And if it's a good investment, hopefully more than that. The U.S. government used to make good investments. And he talks about the Jefferson administration and the Louisiana Purchase. We'll come back to that in the conclusion right after this short break.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Do you know there is an ongoing war right here in America? Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on. And learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality.
Many people write us about their experience with Extendivite. Allow me to read you one from Amazon.com. I just wanted you to know I saw my doctor and I laughed because he said, "I don't know what you're doing, but keep doing it." I have been taking Extendivite. I had borderline high blood pressure, heart flutter, high cholesterol. I changed my diet and included Extendivite with an amazing turnaround for the better. A few months later, I had a doctor's appointment and took a stress test. I passed. No heart flutter. Blood pressure was perfect. My doctor even took me off my medicine. I thank you truly from the bottom of my heart. This stuff works, and I'm so grateful for Extendivite. Thank you, Justin G. Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Welcome back. Deuteronomy 23:20 in the NASB, actually 19 and 20. You shall not charge interest to your countrymen, interest on money, food, or anything that may be loaned at interest. You may charge interest to a foreigner, but to your countrymen you shall not charge interest, so that the Lord your God may bless you in all that you undertake in the land which you are about to enter to possess. And so it's interesting, you know, just as a brief aside, I haven't found the other passage. I'll find it. I was thinking of, but you know, you shall not charge interest. Why? So that the Lord your God may bless you. And so, you know, I submit that bad guys have basically used this technology, so to speak, against the unwitting masses, weaponized it against the unwitting masses, so to speak. And so loaning anything at interest to your countrymen then becomes a curse. And again, you know, Hosea 4:6, I believe, my people perish for lack of knowledge. And so that's unfortunate. Continuing with Simon Black's letter. The U.S. government used to make good investments. In 1803, the administration of Thomas Jefferson acquired 2.1 million square kilometers of land from the French in what became known as the Louisiana Purchase. Jefferson's people negotiated a hell of a deal, paying the equivalent of about $300 million, just 40 cents per acre in today's money. And yes, they used debt to finance the purchase. Later administrations bought Florida from the Spanish, Alaska from the Russians, the Virgin Islands from Denmark, etc. These were all phenomenal deals. Even as late as the 1950s, the bulk of the U.S. federal budget was productivity-related investments like infrastructure. Remember the interstate highway system? Wasn't that Eisenhower? Mandatory entitlements comprised just 29% of the budget. And then parenthetically, he adds, bear in mind, back then they still had plenty of entitlement programs, including Social Security, the GI Bill, etc. But the bigger those get, the more untenable the system and situation. And then, you know, as those programs grow, you have the dis-ease or the discomfort, the ill-ease of the Malthusian contingent that always wants to say, well, we have this group of useless eaters. Maybe we should just encourage them to die off. So it's an interesting tension that's created. Anyway, by the early 21st century, there were hardly any productivity-related investments remaining. Mandatory entitlements alone account for more than 60% of the U.S. federal budget. Again, I've talked about this. And, you know, how these unfunded mandates and liabilities are crushing the economy. And I always go back to the, I think it was September 2009, that Jim Rickards, who was at Omnis at the time, as a forensic economist, what is that, was talking about the Triffin dilemma and how the powers that shouldn't be, as James Corbett would say, were hard at work trying to forestall the Triffin dilemma, and the IMF SDR, the special drawing right, was to become the currency of last resort to replace the dollar and basically offload the Triffin dilemma problem onto the SDR. Because, you know, it's not going away. The sucking sound persists. Doesn't matter what, you know, arose by any other name. It still arose. It's the system, Virginia. You know, it's the system, stupid, that's causing the problem, maybe. Anyway, perpetuating a failed system time and time again, renaming it, rebranding it. Well, maybe this time it'll work. Nope. So anyway, he was talking about how the unfunded liabilities would be pushed out and inflation would basically be used to depreciate them out over a period of 10 to 20 years. And so that's interesting. Anyway, that's another aside. So concluding Simon Black's letter, mandatory entitlements alone at this point account for more than 60% of the U.S. federal budget. Think about that. How long can all of this dead weight continue before it drags the system and everyone along with it down like a boat anchor? And Uncle Sam managed to blow $2 billion on a website for Obamacare, he adds, literally six times more than the entire Louisiana purchase cost in inflation-adjusted dollars. That's astonishing. With decisions like that, it's easy to understand how – and how does that happen, by the way, in a technocratic environment? $2 billion? Unbelievable. With all of the open source software, all of the open source code already written, it's just unconscionable. With decisions like that, it's easy to understand how $11.6 trillion in debt would only result in $5.1 $1 trillion in economic output. And that's the real killer. It's not the debt itself. It's the painfully wasteful decisions of what they choose to do with it. But we have been usurped and hijacked. And, you know, it's that old adage. Was it Edmund Burke, I want to say? All that is necessary for the triumph of evil is that good men do nothing. When you start to understand that, and that is sort of the salient takeaway from Hayek's Road to Serfdom, the problem, you know, it's what I call the libertarian dilemma. The desire to be left alone is sometimes seen as licentiousness or opportunism on the part of others to take advantage of those who just want to be left alone. Well, they're not going to fight back. The Christians will turn the other cheek, so we can take advantage of them. How awesome is that? You know, it's that kind of thing. So, that obviously is a problem. I guess, you know, I'm just looking real quick as an aside. The quote, "All that is necessary for the triumph of evil is that good men do nothing," it's disputed. And the way WikiQuote puts it, this is probably the most quoted statement attributed to Burke, which is ironic, isn't it? "And an extraordinary number of variants of it exist, but all without any definite original source. They closely resemble remarks known to have been made by the utilitarian philosopher John Stuart Mill," another old school bad guy, "in an address at the University of St. Andrew, February 1, 1867. Bad men need nothing more." And I've mentioned this one before, but, you know, John Stuart Mill was basically saying, guys, this to me is like the clarion call to bad guys. Bad men need nothing more to compass their ends than that good men should look on and do nothing. Exactly. And that's what's happening in America now. The unwitting masses find themselves too busy and too stupefied and dumbed down to really do anything about situation in which we find ourselves, which reminds me of the other sentiments of Jefferson. I think it was the 1816 letter to Samuel Kercheval, when Jefferson wrote, "We must make our election between economy and liberty, or profusion and servitude. If we run into such debts as that we must be taxed in our meat and in our drink, in our necessaries and our comforts, in our labors and our amusements, for our callings and our creeds, as the people of England are, our people, like them, must come to labor 16 hours in the 24. You mean that's not normal? Giving the earnings of 15 of these to the government for their debts and daily expenses, and the 16th being insufficient to afford us bread, we must live as they now do, on oatmeal and potatoes. Have no time to think." Here's the point, though. "Have no time to think. No means of calling the mismanagers to account, but be glad to obtain subsistence by hiring ourselves to rivet their chains on the necks of our fellow sufferers." You know, it's a more pervasive form of slavery, and under the specious guise of freedom, which is why it works so well, you know. All of those quotes, you know, Johann Wolfgang von Goethe, "None are more hopelessly enslaved than those who falsely believe themselves free." Those who make the Faustian bargain, basically, right? "Ma, I'm free." No. And I always think of Harriet Tubman. I freed thousands of slaves. I could have freed thousands more if they'd known they were slaves, which is, I think, a provocative irony in America today. and that quote that I believe is attributed to Dresden James, the gnome de plume, Dresden James. The ideal tyranny is that which is ignorantly self-administered by its victims. The most perfect slaves are, therefore, those which blissfully and unawaredly enslave themselves. How fantastic. And then you start to get this picture of a psychopathy that develops. There are folks that have made videos, for example, you know, monkeys versus crabs. You know, monkeys in a barrel versus crabs in a pot. Crabs pull other crabs back in, but monkeys pull each other out of the barrel. Anyway, and how do you, you know, there's the video that's floated around. It's been out for years. Based on the same psychological experiments, how do you get the herd basically to quell and suppress dissent? You use certain key examples, and then pretty soon the herd is self-censoring, so to speak. Anyway, we all need to be aware of this stuff. And the analogy that I would use to conclude this thought, I guess, and then we'll move on, is very simply, you know, there are people that talk about certain things. And the difference, I think, generally speaking, on this network is not so much that somebody is lurking around the corner waiting to get you, but that, yes, traps have been laid by certain, you know, cunning and ambitious folks, which we've heard about for 250 years. You know, someone might do that. That is our historical record. We should be vigilant, therefore, eternally vigilant, and maintain a watchful eye, because if we don't, then guess what? John Stuart Mill's words come true. Bad men need nothing more to compass their ends than that good men should look on and do nothing. And in similar fashion from Edmund Burke's thoughts on the cause of the present discontents, he wrote, "When bad men combine, the good must associate, else they will fall one by one, an unpitied sacrifice in a contemptible struggle." And where we are in America today, there really is no struggle. So the point is this, in an analogy where some people who don't quite understand the game that's afoot and the gamification of everything, you know, Rand Corporation and the iterative prisoner's dilemma, some people will say, well, you know, there are hazards in the wilderness. When you're walking around out in the woods, you might trip over something, so you have to kind of watch, versus the person that will tell you traps have been laid. There are traps that have been laid in the woods. There are traps that have been set to snare you. So it's probably important to be aware of that and pay attention first. You know, the other analogy I use sometimes is when people figure out something is wrong, they want to rush into a minefield. And it's better perhaps to step back and take a sober assessment of the minefield before we rush off through it. So hopefully that makes sense. And now we'll move into other news of the day. So I mentioned yesterday and so much of this stuff is based on stupid psychological experiments, which really are rooted in the manipulation of one's fellow men. How can we create another magic trick in Clark's third law fashion? Oh, wow, I never would have. Yeah, no, it's all common sense, really. So Cal Newport, computer scientist, professor, wrote his article last week, July 6th, Open Offices Make You Less Open. And I talked about that yesterday. On spatial boundaries and face-to-face interaction, this becomes an issue. Why do companies deploy open office layouts? A major justification is the idea that removing spatial boundaries between colleagues will generate increased collaboration and smarter collective intelligence. But is it real? We'll talk more when we come back. Stick around.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds, up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AirOutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it. At AROutfitting.com.
Do you know there is an ongoing war right here in America? Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government...
Welcome back. Actually, before we get into the other stuff, I'm just going to finish this thought for the hour, and then we'll move on. But so I mentioned Deuteronomy 23:19-20, shall not charge interest to your countrymen, interest on money, food, or anything that may be loaned at interest. You may charge interest to a foreigner, but to your countrymen you shall not charge interest, so that the Lord your God may bless you in all that you undertake in the land which you're about to enter and possess. So it's a blessing, and not to loan at interest, certainly not to one's countrymen. And then, you know, you have this sentiment about the poor. Deuteronomy 15:11, for the poor will never cease to be in the land. That was a point that Jesus reiterated. For the poor will never cease to be in the land. Therefore, I command you, saying, you shall freely open your hand to your brother, to your needy and your poor in the land. What do we do in America today? You know, have you seen all of the like the check cashing places and stuff that are opening that are predatory? And this is what we're doing. How can we possibly consider that a good thing? And you know, that reminds me of what's been happening in India. You know, and for that matter, it's the same William Devil, Bill Livingston, Rockefeller nonsense. Snake oil salesmen cheating people to teach them, but if they're too stupid to learn, it's not my fault. Preying on their naivete and, you know, as Nesta Webster put it, their simple faith and lack of education, seeing whether they're being led. And so, you know, you have the IMF, World Bank scheme, the Reconstruction Bank and you know, all of these predatory organizations that take advantage of developing nations, emerging markets, and so forth. And on a smaller level in India, there have been a number of stories. There was even a documentary done about the predatory lending practices over there, people trying to buy water at interest, for example, and getting caught up in usury schemes that are so usurious and so onerous that the family leader, the family patriarch, for example, will commit suicide because then the debt doesn't follow the family or something like that. I mean, this is the world we live in today. I mean, we've always had trouble, but we should be, if we truly fancy ourselves smarter, better, more enlightened, why are these things happening? I ask rhetorically. And last but not least, I suppose, on this note, Deuteronomy 28, the chapter of blessings and curses, the promises of blessings and the promises of curses. The promise of blessing, God mentions, the Lord will open for you his good storehouse, the heavens, to give rain to your land its season and to bless all the work of your hand, and you shall not lend to many nations. You shall lend to many nations, but you shall not borrow. You shall lend to many nations, but you shall not borrow. That's in the passage under blessings. Lending, but not borrowing. Again, just some food for thought. Second hour coming up. Stick around. We'll be right back after this short break.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.